Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me today for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. Coming to you today, Wednesday, December 5th, 2018. Thanks to all of you who have been watching faithfully here on Facebook Live, watching on YouTube, or later hearing on the podcast. So thanks for taking the time to join me and to hear my take on three important issues of the week in international education. And for those of you who are new to SMIE Consulting, that is Social Media and International Education Consulting, a business I founded almost 5 years ago now after leaving Education USA to help institutions and organizations that are looking to better connect with students around the world to further their institutional goals and to bring a little bit more light into this world that we live in. And cross-cultural understanding, to be sure. So for those who have attended one of these sessions before, I'll share with you now that today is coming on the day of former President Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush's funeral at the National Cathedral, listening to some of the eulogies from his family, from his trusted associates, reminds me of what politicians can and should be, regardless of your party. Hopefully you see the legacy that Bush 41 left as a positive one. And I'm just reminded today that his approach to politics, to living as a human in this world, is one that was driven by his faith, but also reflects, I think, importantly, it reflects his attitude towards education, towards the world, that we all need to be taking a little bit kinder, gentler approach to the world around us, including especially in our industry, in international education, the students and the organizations and institutions we live in. Reflecting on that today, this has certainly left me eyes a little moistened this morning, but certainly in remembering him and some of the formative times of my college days when he was in office around in the late 80s and early 90s. So certainly he's left an impact on my life, and for those who didn't know him well, he certainly is one who will leave a lasting mark on this country, has left a lasting mark on this country, and hopefully the world. Well, today, let's get to it. We're talking about three interesting topics, somewhat related, but not always. But what we're talking about today, first off, we're going to leave with a story that I never thought I'd see in all my days of doing international education. A story that popped up late last week about from Times Higher Ed, from University of Illinois, and actually Inside Higher Ed, not Times Higher Ed, that the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign is now insuring, at least its colleges of business and engineering, are insuring themselves against drops in Chinese students. Should there be a minimum 20% drop in Chinese undergraduate or Chinese students at the University of Illinois, it will trigger the payment of, get this, $60 million to the university. That is a pretty penny. Obviously, that doesn't come for free. The university has paid $424,000 to basically get that $60 million policy that ensures their programs against the drop. Any future drops in Chinese students that might be coming to their shores, to their institution. So that's, for those who don't know much about University of Illinois, they are one of the large, is the flagship institution, state institution in the state of Illinois. And like several of several Big Ten schools like Illinois, they have invested heavily in recruitment of Chinese undergraduates in part offset decreasing state budgets, but also to allow some of their programs to grow. So it's interesting to see what's happening with this. This is the first of its kind, particularly as it relates to international students, and this is very specifically related to Chinese students. They have gone all in at the University of Illinois in Chinese students, and I think at last count, I don't know the exact numbers, but last count there were 4 or 5, maybe 6,000 Chinese students at the University of Illinois' Champaign-Urbana campus. So obviously a significant drop in that from that country would have devastating financial consequences. And it's interesting that in engineering and business, those are the two colleges apparently at the University of Illinois that attract the largest number of international students, particularly from China. They are the ones that have pushed for this policy to be put in place. And they paid a significant amount, $424,000. So that is something that is being watched closely by other institutions, not only in the United States, but also around the world. The Chancellor of Australia's University of Queensland is quoted in the article, or referenced in the article, suggesting that universities should put revenues from Chinese students into a trust fund to insulate themselves against a future drop in enrollments from East Asia. Another lecturer in education at the University of Manchester in England said the Illinois move was an interesting development and represents the logical extension of the marketplace in international higher education. So what do you think? Is this something that will be more common in higher education, where institutions that have become heavily dependent on international students from any one country or range of countries would then take out insurance policies to protect themselves from financial losses should there be significant downturns in the market? Illinois has pegged it at 20% that would trigger this insurance policy. Is that enough? Would it need to be more? So interesting to see that this is happening. The language from Illinois, when asked about why they went with that particular amount and $60 million as the figure, insurance policy figure, the dean of the College of Business there, Jeff Brown, indicated that $60 million was chosen because that roughly is our exposure across the two colleges, College of Business, College of Engineering. If demand had actually completely disappeared, we'd be made whole for that year. So interesting that he's talking about the $60 million is what it would take to cover them completely for a year if demand dried up completely. So I don't know if that means they would no longer have international students, and then that's what they're budgeting that $60 million on, or if that's just if they lost 20% of Chinese percent of Chinese students. If they'd had that kind of a drop, then that would be that would cover their disappearance, or the other 80% probably. I don't know. So interesting that that's they're probably going to, if that ever were to happen, that would certainly more than cover their costs if only 20% left. But at least that is the insurance policy trigger. $60 million would be the payment of once that number would reach. So are other institutions going to follow suit? Is yours in the position where it might consider doing something like that? It's certainly a very new phenomenon and one that may see some traction in the coming weeks and months or years. I'm curious what you might think about that. Is the University of Illinois on the right path, or is this something that is kind of a little bit off-putting? And maybe that's not necessarily the best phrase for it. But is this something that where again institutions see dollar signs for the most part when they see international students, not necessarily the cultural and socioeconomic benefits of having students from other countries on their campuses? So I'm curious what that will look like in the next year or so. Very, very curious coming out of Illinois, so we'll see what happens there. On our second topic today, it's a lot of the press in the last couple of years, certainly in terms of countries that are benefiting from the perceived downturn in new, certainly the real downturn in new international students enrolling in the United States at colleges and universities for the last 2 years, as demonstrated in the IIE Open Doors numbers that came out a couple weeks ago. Certainly, Canada has been one of the main beneficiaries. Their numbers, international student numbers, were up 20% this past year. I haven't seen the figures for 2017-18 yet, but certainly Canada has been enjoying some rapid growth in their international student populations. But at what cost? And that's what we'll look at now with the next article coming out of the Pi News this past week. And it has to do with what they call firefighting, the impact of Canada's international student growth laid bare. The focus of the article is on some smaller, probably lesser-known institutions to U.S. audiences for international students. One of those is Loyalist College in Ontario. Another is, Whiteway is the gentleman at Loyalist College. There's a couple other institutions that they reference, Humber College in Toronto, and North Island College. So Georgian College is also mentioned, and most of these are in Ontario. But the focus of the article is really on how significantly, these are smaller schools, lesser known schools that had very little traction with international students in the past, and all of a sudden in the last 2 to 3 years have just exploded with their international student numbers. And what does that happen with regard to services? And this is always, certainly as when I talk to colleagues who are either new to their institutions or being now tasked with growing their international populations, I ask first, well, what are your services like on campus for your internationals? What comes first, the chicken or the egg here? Do you have people in place? Do you have services in place to help these new students that are all of a sudden going to come to your campus in larger numbers? Do you have the facilities, the services, the people to help those students really integrate into your college campus and be taken care of and be welcomed? Rather than just an empty set of words, are you actually going to live what you say and bring these students into an environment that is healthy for them, that they're going to feel their needs are met, and that you understand what those needs are, first off. So that's always a question I have for institutions that are just getting into the game or just understanding what it means to really develop an international student enrollment management plan. It's not just a recruiting plan or an admissions plan. If it is, then you're starting off on the wrong foot. Because frankly, why would international students come to your campus that haven't come before? Is it something new that you've added, or are you just going places where they are? What's their motivation going to be? Why would they want to come? So it's interesting to see how institutions react to this. But in Canada, what's happened is these institutions, published stats show that in Canada, international student numbers are up 34% since 2014. I think it's a little bit more than that this year, but 34% in the last 4 years. So this one college that they start with, Loyalist College, he was quoted as saying, 4 years ago, we had 40 international students. This January, in January 2019, they're going to hit 1,000. And that is just incredible, unforeseen growth, I'm sure, for a small school like that. And what does that do to the college's services, the support services that they have in place, not just for international students, but for all students? And it's that stratospheric growth is not unusual. In fact, the article is quoting many Canadian institutions are trying to adapt to as their international student populations have risen to above 30% or above 50% in one case across campus. So, what is that happen? What's happening on campuses? These Canadian institutions are being flooded by international students that are coming to Canada for reasons that are been we've talked about on this podcast and this this chat over the last few weeks is because of it's a they're viewed as a more welcoming environment nation for international students. They're seen as their immigration processing for visas is a lot smoother and students are prioritized. There are very clear lines of transition from study to employment in Canada. And in fact, there are certain provinces, interestingly enough, that are experiencing significant population declines where the universities and post-secondary institutions there are offering incentives for international students to stay in those provinces after they finish their studies to work, to live, and to become citizens. And there are clear pathways to citizenship through work, after study through work and to becoming citizens. So there's been a lot of positives that have driven international students to Canada over the last few years. A lot of the way the government's set up things, the way institutions are positioning themselves. So certainly that is making Canada a more attractive option. Their costs are relatively, slightly lower than in the United States. But they are being driven there, not only being attracted, but are being driven there by, as we've talked about here as well, by policies of the current administration and the perceived rhetoric of an unwelcoming nation to immigrants, even though students are not immigrants, they're non-immigrants by definition in the visa law regulations. But this is something that I think is worth exploring, that in Canada that these institutions have had such rapid growth that they're now at a point where staffing-wise in student support roles, they're having to increase minimum language level expectations to ensure they're only accepting the best quality applications now for new incoming students. So they're raising their admission standards as a result because they perhaps can't handle as many students that were might have been previously or easily acceptable, but are now no longer, they don't have the capacity to take care of them in intensive English language programs or what have you. So I think there's a lot of challenges that these Canadian institutions, the smaller ones in particular, that don't perhaps have already have those support services in place. But I think you're going to see some leveling out here in Canada in the future because, frankly, with so many of these institutions who've experienced this rapid growth, up to 30 to 50% of their total populations being international, there's going to be some reactions against that. And in terms of, well, and some probably deep thinking going on about, well, is this the right mix of students that we want on our campus? Perhaps in the more populous cities in Toronto, Montreal, Quebec, Vancouver, there may not be as significant as need as in some provinces that maybe are really hungry to have those excess students turn into citizens someday and tax-paying citizens. So that's something that I think it will be interesting to watch to see how that develops. But I think what you're seeing across Canada is it's not just these smaller schools, but institutions who already had been active internationally are now at 20, 25%, even 30% international. What does that do to your international student population, to your overall population? What are the impacts on that? And I think you're going to see from the Canadian perspective and from international students eventually, they'll start to see, okay, well, and institutions will probably start pushing back and saying, well, we don't really want to grow that much more. That 25-30% is probably about as high as we can go, realistically, in terms of overall dynamics that they're looking for on their college campuses. So it'll be interesting to watch how that develops. And again, the capacity issue is something I've talked about here as far as it relates to U.S. institutions. When you look at the overall percentage of our higher ed enrollment in the United States that is international, we're only at 5. I've been hovering around 5% for the last 5 or 6 years. Now, Canada is from this article, it shows that they're already there are some schools that are 30-50% international, but I think the average is somewhere around 20 to 25. UK is about that too, 15 to 20, 25. They've had those issues as well. But another country that we'll shift gears to for the third article here is Australia. Australia and Canada have probably been the two biggest single beneficiaries in terms of country destinations that have benefited in the last couple of years from the decrease in international students coming to the U.S. New students coming to the U.S. are going to Canada, Australia. What's happening in Australia? Let's look at the number of institutions across these three countries, U.S., Canada, and Australia. U.S., over 4,500 post-secondary institutions, accredited post-secondary institutions. In Canada, less than 100 post-secondary institutions. In Australia, less than 50. I think it's only 35 or so. Their numbers are certainly significantly smaller than of institutions that these prospective international students can enroll in. And in Australia, the reputation, we hear the word cash cow thrown around fairly commonly in international education circles when it comes to international students and how they're viewed. And this is actually the title of an article on ABC, that's one of the Australian broadcasting company sites, that is titled "Poor English, Few Jobs, Are Australian Universities Using International Students as Cash Cows?" So, ow, damn, that's pretty damning in terms of an indictment of how some institutions in Australia are perceiving international students. There's some interesting storylines highlighted here. One is reflecting a lecturer who had a student coming into their class, had a Chinese student in their class that made an appointment to come see them, and when that student came, was accompanied by another person who seemed to be more of a translator for the student. The problem was the student that had been in that class for a full semester couldn't speak any English, and she didn't understand anything that the lecturer said. Told ABC in Australia. The woman who was serving as the translator basically had gone. The student had gone through her first year of her degree without the ability to speak English. So obviously the professors are floored, and they're thinking, oh my, how did this ever happen? And you realize, well, okay, it's being viewed widely as a moneymaker. So English language standards in Australia might not be as high. I'm not sure on that. I don't think that would be the case. But you also see the culture of cheating and sidestepping loopholes finding loopholes in policies and procedures and when it comes to testing on IELTS or TOEFL exams or what have you, certainly in Australia. Those are issues, and that students that find themselves completing, article quote, students that find themselves completing degrees which cost in excess of $100,000 rarely find professional employment after graduation. That's regardless of their English language, but this is showing that the numbers are have been growing dramatically. There are now 380,000 post-secondary level international students in Australia. The overall number is 753,000 international students, but there's a lot of those are vocational, I think. The other 370,000 are vocational, I think, the way it's portrayed in the article. So they do. Chinese students in particular make up 30% of all students, international students in Australian institutions. So that is indicating to many in Australia that Australia is becoming too reliant on China as a source of its international student population, and that's potentially putting Australia's educational industry at risk of political and economic repercussions, which seems to be a lot of the talk in the States as well, with talks of trade wars and such with China. Who knows where those will go? Hopefully that's just rhetoric, but you never know. Rhetoric and tweets. So international students, really, at Australian universities, at some institutions, make up nearly 50% of the student body, and at paying a disproportionately large percentage of their fees. Compared to their Australian counterparts. So you see that they're the top five universities, top five international population universities. University of New South Wales at 34% international. Melbourne University, 39% international. University of Sydney, 32% international. Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology, 45% international. And Monash University, 45% international. Each of those institutions has at least 19 up to 27,000 international students on their college campuses. That's more than the top. Each of those is more than the top U.S. institutions receiving international students. NYU is top of the list this year. They're 17,500 international students. So these top Australian institutions have more internationals than any college campus in the United States, and their percentage is certainly dramatically higher. The revenue that these universities get from international students is at least a third in almost all but one of these cases, these five institutions. At least a third of their revenue for the institution comes from international students. So a lot of interesting storylines coming out of Australia as they've grown in their international populations and how that's impacting their overall institutional health. And the health of those students after they graduate. What happens to them? Are they able to find jobs? Are they ready for the jobs that they graduate in their fields? Are their English standards high enough when they leave? And are there checks in that process? So there's a lot of potential issues and things that fortunately we haven't had on the same scale in the United States, certainly. The percentage of institutions in the U.S. that occupy over 20% international is a very short list. But in Australia, the average is 25% at universities across the country. So they have very little capacity to grow further. As we pointed out in previous podcasts here during the live chat, there is one of those institutions on that list, University of Sydney. They're at 32% international now. They've stopped new recruitment of international students. They do not want to grow anymore because they realize as an institution it's not wise for them to get bigger than what they are currently at, internationally speaking. So a lot of interesting storylines developing here through these different countries, these source countries in Australia and Canada, and a new phenomenon in the U.S. Who knew? You can insure your programs against drops in international students. So I guess you can insure anything these days. But University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana is groundbreaking in its approach to their policies on recruitment, international student recruitment when it comes to Chinese students on their campus. So as we conclude, that's it for the three stories. As we conclude this week, I do want to recommend to each of you, if you haven't already subscribed to our SMIE e-newsletter, it's called All the SMIE News Fit to Share, and you know I love to share. So SMIE, Social Media International Education News. That's the format for the letter. Posting the newsletter, I'm posting a link to the most recent newsletter from this past Monday. I encourage you all to subscribe, and so you get that in your inboxes every Monday. I'm also going to pop up the links to our website, and to our encourage you to log on to our website, social media, smieconsulting.org, to see all the other various services that we do provide and free resources in terms of presentations, blog posts, and other subscription ways you can get in contact with me. To get our content from SMIE Consulting through the newsletter, through the podcast, through this live chat. Always eager to hear what you have to say. The website is smieconsulting.org, and encourage you all to bookmark that so you can refer to it as the times go along, as services become necessary for you to expand what you're doing internationally, or you're looking to think more strategically, need help developing your planning. Happy to help along those regards. So thanks again for joining us today. Have a very pleasant week and enjoy the days to come. Cheers.